please the court. My name is Megan Skelton, and I'm arguing this morning on behalf of the appellant, Joseph Edwards. The scope of a valid search incident to arrest does not include the routine exposure of a person's naked genitals while they are standing on the street. The search incident to arrest warrant exception does not authorize strip searches. A search that is that intrusive needs some specific, individualized, particularized justification, and that is not the same as the justification for a valid arrest. Strip searches are never routine. They are not based validly on simply the general possibility of finding something. Instead, there must be, within the police officer's knowledge, specific information that this particular arrestee is concealing weapons or the fruit of the offense of the arrest underneath his or her clothing. In this case, the fact that Mr. Edwards' pants were not fully pulled down or actually removed is irrelevant. The rearrangement of clothing alone and pulling them away from the body is sufficient to make it a strip search. The Supreme Court, in the most recent case that it addressed strip searches, Stafford Unified School District versus Reading, described a strip search as simply exposing the pelvic area to some degree. And once that happens, once the naked skin of a person's genitals are visible to police officers, then the search is categorically different. This is the case even if officials are the only ones to see. The fact that the neighbor in this case didn't actually see Mr. Edwards' penis does not make it any less public. Public in this context means location. So that means on a street as opposed to behind a closed door, in the police station, in a nurse's office, something like that. Here, what happened, the facts are essentially undisputed, is that the police loosened Mr. Edwards' belt. The police officer himself testified, "I loosened his belt so I could pull his pants down." This is at Joint Appendix, page 151. They pulled his pants and his boxers away from his body. They shined a flashlight on his genitals. Whether they actually did pull his pants down, again, like I said, is irrelevant. His pants were, by the time of the search, about 7 inches down from his waist. Whether they fell on their own after the police rearranged his clothing, that is enough to make it a strip search.
Well, we have findings by the district court with respect to all of that, right?
Actually, Your Honor, no. There's no finding, per se.
I thought there was a finding that he was pulling the garments away from the body and that there was nobody could see because of the length of
his shirt. That's correct.
Except police officers. That's not a finding.
That is a finding. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I jumped the gun. I thought you were going to say finding about whether the police officers pulled his pants down. She said that there was no testimony about that. Now, there is a finding that the neighbor did not see his penis.
Right.
But again, like I said, that is not the test. The fact that the skin of a person...
No, your brief read a little differently. I think you're right. You're sticking with the fact that you have. Your brief seemed to me to suggest that maybe the neighbor did see, and we have a finding that this court the neighbor didn't.
Well, Your Honor, perhaps I hit that too hard in the brief, but it is absolutely 100% true that she's really just a symbol of the fact that this was on a public street. Whatever she saw a search occur. She saw something happening to Mr. Edwards. To make this
There's
search...
no privacy that would prevent someone on the street seeing another person on the street searched. You can drive downtown Baltimore, I don't know, once a week and see somebody being searched.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
So you don't gain anything from that alone.
I disagree because the location of the search, apart from who sees it, is still one of the factors that the Supreme Court requires reviewing courts to consider. And also in Stafford Unified School District, the Supreme Court stated that they would not have the Fourth Amendment analysis require litigation about who saw what, that was not the factor that the reasonableness inquiry would turn on. But truly, Your Honor, whether she saw or not, that's not where this case will be won or lost. The fact of the matter is that the police's justification to conduct the strip search here was woefully inadequate in light of Fourth Amendment requirements. I'd like to talk about two of the factors in particular. First, search for contraband, and second, search for weapons. I'd like to start with contraband first. Trying to find contraband in this particular search, which was one of the police officer's stated goals, is an insufficient Fourth Amendment justification in this case. The Supreme Court in United States versus Robinson, and again in 2009 in Gantt versus Arizona, or Arizona versus Gantt, all explicitly say that the search incident to arrest warrant exception is to find the fruits of the offense of the arrest. Robinson says, this is a paraphrase but pretty close, that the police officer cannot search for an as yet unknown ground for arrest or accusation. And in this case, there's no question that there was no accusation or information that Mr. Edwards had any contraband. In fact, the police explicitly testified that they had no prior intelligence that he was involved in any drug activity that day.
Well, that day, but what about his prior history with respect to narcotics?
If this court were to consider the prior history of drug arrests to be a justification to strip search on an arrest that had nothing to do with drugs, it would mean any person who has ever been arrested for drugs in the past is subject to strip search. The Supreme Court has been absolutely clear on the search incident to arrest warrant exception that when looking for evidence, separate from weapons, I'll talk about that in a sec, when looking for evidence, it is evidence of the offense of arrest. And in this case, it was a domestic assault. There's no indication, no reasonable suspicion, no probable cause, no warrant, nothing that had anything to do with contraband. Searching for contraband here was wildly outside the scope of a reasonable search incident to arrest.
Now, well, let's get to the searches, or the course of the search. What should the detective have done when he found the drug?
The gun?
I'm sorry, the contraband on his penis.
You're right.
Yeah. What should he have done? You know, let's get to the point. I know you've made the argument that there was no basis for going in his penis, but I'm interested in your perspective on what the detective should have done once he found these drugs.
Well, Your Honor, I accept that that's a tricky situation. I personally, as you can probably tell from the brief, am personally pretty offended by the use of a knife. I think that the manner, but my personal views on that aside, I think that the manner of the search and seizure, which is, of course, something that this court must consider, that a knife next to a man's penis held by a police officer is a manner of conducting a search that is going to instill fear, terror, humiliation, degradation in any person.
What should they have done?
I think that, well, of course, let me say that to get to this point, they have already violated the Fourth Amendment.
I understand your point.
Once they get here, I think that a gloved hand would be less offensive.
Oh, no, because then you could make the argument that he's a manhandler.
Well, I think that by this point, if the member of the public had done this would have already been a sexual assault. But I understand that this is a difficult.
It would have already been a sexual assault.
If a member of the public had done this to Mr. Edwards, that's what I'm saying. There's no good option here, really. But I think that by this point,
had done what? Pulled his pants?
Pulled his pants down and put a knife.
Pulled it. You don't know about now. Know about pulled pants.
They opened his clothes and they rearranged his clothes to expose his naked genitals.
Well, only to that person, one person. And if the person had some cause to believe, they're in the middle of a fight.
And
there were allegations of an arrest warrant to this guy, right?
The arrest was a valid arrest.
You know, the government is saying it's only domestic dispute. Domestic disputes are sometimes very difficult. For the person on the receiving end.
Sure. Well, absolutely. And it was a valid arrest. We are not contesting the validity of the arrest. We are contesting the validity of
make the argument that they should have just left drugs there and taken them to the police station?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. The police wagon was on its way. This could have been done in a more private manner. Once we're talking about this, we've already had the Fourth Amendment violation, so it's the manner I
can't win, really, according to you.
I'm sorry.
They cannot win. There's already been a Fourth Amendment violation.
Yes, Your Honor.
Should walk away, really, because they want to sort of minimize their liability.
Well, no. What should have happened was once this happens, they've seized evidence in violation of the Fourth Amendment, and the evidence should be suppressed.
Oh, I thought you were telling me the search was a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
The search was.
So you could bring a 1983 action about the search, right?
I'll help them find a lawyer if I can. But yes.
I'm not. But you would give him the advice that he has a valid 1983 action on the basis of the search.
I would. I would like to talk about the police officer's attempt to justify the search on the basis of trying to find a weapon, which, of course, no question, is a valid purpose of a search incident to arrest, but not of strip search here. And the reason is because the police had already searched everywhere where there could be a weapon. His testimony on this was explicit. He had searched and found no evidence of there being a weapon.
In the record that sometimes people did place their guns, small guns, in this location?
Your Honor, that would be tantamount to allowing a strip search on the mere possibility.
I'm just asking if there was testimony to that.
The police officer said that it had never happened to him, but he had heard of it happening. That mere possibility, however, is insufficient for a search this intrusive, not to mention the fact that he had dispelled any suspicion that Mr. Edwards was armed at this point. He had searched everywhere and affirmatively testified that he had found no indication that he was armed.
Yeah, but he found no indication that he had guns either. I mean, that he had drugs either.
That's correct.
In fact, he did have drugs.
Your Honor, Judge Motz, what I'm talking about now is simply the weapons justification.
I understand that, but he'd done preliminary search, and the preliminary search had indicated to him no drugs, no guns.
With respect, I would suggest that drugs are a little easier to hide than a gun, and that I don't think that it is a logical thing that somebody...
It's less hard than a knife.
The allegations here didn't involve anything involving a knife. There's no reason to believe, there was no reasonable suspicion that there was any knife in this case.
Well, as I understand, you helped me with the law here. I thought the police officers were free to be sure that a suspect would not endanger them via any weapon.
That's correct. And they had done that. They had handcuffed him so that he had no access to anything in his pants. And they had searched him. Robinson, the Supreme Court case on searches incident to arrest, allow a pat-down and pockets and perhaps running inside the waistband and the collar and the socks. A search incident to arrest is not a strip search.
If they had conducted this search inside the paddy wagon, would you have a different result?
It would be a very different case. However, I'm not sure the court would have a different result. And that is because in Dorlui, the case that basically the search, that this court's case from several years ago, where there was a search incident to arrest that involved the strip search in the paddy wagon, the fact that it was done in that relative privacy was a significant factor that this court considered. However, there's still a different fact in that case, and that was that there was specific information known to the police before conducting the search via a reliable confidential informant and via specific surveillance that the police had conducted, that there was fruits of the evidence of the arrest, which was missing money in that case, that was hidden somewhere on the defendant's person, and the first search did not reveal any indication of that. So this court case that did a strip search incident to arrest more privately had a critical fact that this case does not.
So, Ms. Skelton, let me make sure I understand your argument. You're making two kind of independent points, aren't you, that the actual action, the actual pulling the pants and looking for the contraband was a violation of the Fourth Amendment. But am I correct in understanding that you're saying the manner in which the evidence was seized was also a Fourth Amendment violation?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
You only need to get to the second.
You're saying these are independent bases
Correct. That first we have the fact that the search exceeded the scope of a search incident to arrest, and then we have the question that the manner of conducting the search was also illegal.
Drugs have been found? Why wouldn't the inevitable discovery doctrine apply?
Your Honor, in order for that to apply, we would have to have facts that are not present here. We'd have to have known what police practices are at the police station. We don't know if Mr. Edwards would have been taken straight to a commissioner and given bail or whether he would have been detained. We don't know anything like that.
No, it seems to me that argument, okay, so that you're saying it might not have been discovered because it might have disappeared by the time that they actually did some sort of search to see them. But then that sort of backtracks into the argument, well, they better get them when they have them.
Your Honor, that's
either they
would
be inevitably discovered, or I mean, it seems to me you almost have to say they would be inevitably discovered to make what happened at the scene unnecessary.
I disagree, Your Honor. I see my time is up.
You can answer the question.
I disagree, and the reason is because I don't agree. I don't concede that they would have been inevitably discovered. There's a couple of reasons for that. First, this court said in Logan versus Sheely that the routine strip searches of arrestees, routine without anything more, is not valid. Second, we don't know if he would have been detained or taken straight to a commissioner and released on bail.
I must not have made my question clear. I thought that you said that once they saw that he had the drug, they should have left him there.
I'm really not suggesting that, Your Honor.
I see. Okay.
But I don't believe that this is a case of inevitable discovery.
But you couldn't, if you would keep your proposition to us, they should have left him there. You can't have it both ways, in other words.
I mean, they would have had to have taken him into custody and brought him. If they were not going to remove the drug, that scene, they would have to remove them at some point.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I also would suggest that this court can't address inevitable discovery. The government never relied on that and never raised it below.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May I please report Rod Rosenstein on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, I'd like to...
Start off with just one quick point.
Yes, sir.
This seems like a classic case of inevitable discovery. Why was that not ever raised in this case, and why don't we have any facts in this record to show where he would have been taken, what the jail procedures would have been? Why is this record silent?
Your Honor, I agree with you that inevitable discovery, we believe, would be a viable argument in this case. That is, that if the officer had not conducted a search, the defendant would have arrived at the jail with 43 baggies of crack cocaine.
But you agree that it wasn't mentioned at all?
There's no reference to it in the record, I agree. Let me address the facts that we believe are...
Is there a reason for that?
I don't believe there's any reason, Your Honor, at least none that I know of. But I certainly agree with Your Honors that if, in fact, it is the case, the defendant was headed for jail, it certainly appears to be the case, and would have been subjected to an administrative search upon his arrival, at which time the drugs would have been discovered. I believe there would be an inevitable discovery argument as well.
But you agree we can't speculate that from this record?
Well, I believe that we can't speculate it from the record, Your Honor, but I do believe it's relevant. And the reason I believe it's relevant is that the purpose of this search incident to arrest was to discover two things: potential weapons that might represent a threat to the officer, and potential contraband, evidence that might be destroyed or the defendant might have access to after he's placed in the police. Now,
is it the government's position that this would be an appropriate search every time there might be the basis to think that there would be potential weapons or potential contraband?
Your Honor, that's the argument that the defense has made, essentially.
But I'm asking if that is the government's position.
We believe that the court doesn't need to resolve that in this case because of the particularized basis. Now,
is that the government's position? Then you can go argue that this case.
Our position, Your Honor, is that there should be some articulable reason. Now, it's got to be an articulable reason. It may be a general reason. That is, you know, it's a high crime area, and I've arrested people in this area in the past in similar circumstances, and that gives me reason to be concerned about my safety and about the risk of this drug dealing. But in this case, there's particularized suspicion of both weapons and drugs. Now, not enough to establish probable cause with regard to the drugs. We certainly see that. But the fact that the officer knew this defendant had a previous drug history certainly would be a reasonable factor for him to consider in determining the scope of the search.
you don't suggest that this, or maybe you do suggest, is this a normal procedure every time a police officer knows somebody has a prior drug history?
I do not, Your Honor. In fact, counsel seized on a comment made by the officer where he makes some reference to being routine. I think he makes reference to 50% of the cases.
Right.
He's not an expert witness, right? He's testifying based on his experience.
But you're familiar with all of the cases that the government gives us where police officers are witnesses on the scene, and then they veer into being experts, and they translate drug conversations for us. They do all kinds of things. This man was, I don't know how long he was a police officer, but for some period of time, he certainly has more knowledge of what goes on in these kinds of things than any of us do, perhaps even than you do. He says in 50% of the time, the Baltimore police do this.
Well, the issue wasn't explored, Your Honor. I don't think there's anything in the record that would suggest that he's making a statement of general police policy. He may be basing that on his experience. It may be arrests under these circumstances. As I said, that issue simply wasn't explored. This was not an examination about police policy.
We're in the record, though, with regard to this defendant. Is there any particularized suspicion that he had contraband on his person?
Not that he had contraband on his
person. Well, no, that's my question.
That he was known to the officer to have been involved in drugs.
Right. So you agree there is no evidence in this record that the officers had particularized suspicion that on this occasion, at this time, he would have contraband on his person?
The officer was aware that the defendant had been involved in drug activity. At this particular time, there is no evidence that the officer knew the defendant had drugs. No. What he knew
or had any particularized suspicion. Other than knowing of past activity.
Correct. What he did know, Your Honor, was that the man had been involved not in a minor domestic assault, but in fact in threatening two women and another passenger in the car with a gun a few hours earlier that day. That was the basis for the arrest. He was suspected of being armed. The officer, in addition to that, knew that he had been allegedly involved in drugs. Now, that would have given the officer a reason, not enough, not probable cause, we concede, but certainly it would be relevant. That is, an officer arresting a person in the Amichai case, for example, a woman arrested at her home for a noise violation, no criminal history. There you've got no reason whatsoever to have
That's no case. That's the worst case scenario.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. But here's a situation where an officer is arresting somebody who a third-party witness has come forward and sworn out an affidavit that he threatened her with a gun a few hours earlier. The officer personally has knowledge of the defendant's involvement in drugs, and that's the predication for the search. Now, the district court judge, Judge Blake, in fact, made that finding. And as Judge Motz noted, and as counsel conceded, she may have argued those facts a bit too harsh, she said in her brief. I'd like to, Your Honors, point the court to precisely where in the record we believe the factual findings support argument. The defendant's argument, in fact, is not simply an argument of law. Their argument is at odds with the factual findings made by the district court, and they made no showing whatsoever that the court erred. Specifically, Your Honors, the district court's findings are set forth in the joint appendix at pages 241 to 248. And those findings are relevant to the four Bell v. Wolfish factors. Now, the first is the issue we've been discussing of justification. That is, Judge Blake found that the officer had a reason to believe a weapon was involved and that the officer had knowledge of the defendant's history of drugs, which she felt at Joint Appendix 245 and 248 was relevant. And in the record at Joint Appendix 96.
Let me ask you if I could. Mr. Edwards was handcuffed while all this was going on. And I haven't heard anybody talk about that. I mean, to me, that's huge. I mean, what in the world were they worried about in terms of their safety if this guy was handcuffed with his hands behind his back?
I think what you have to recognize, Your Honor, is that it's close to midnight. They're putting him in the back of a police van.
Right.
Presumably the officers...
His hands were behind his back. What could he do?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that there have been cases where defendants who've been handcuffed.
There's nothing in this record that suggests that he was a threat to the officers with his hands handcuffed behind his back.
Your Honor, the threat to the officer would be if the defendant brought a weapon into the police van. They may have been picking up other prisoners. They may have been delivering to the court commissioner. They may have been getting out of the van. They may have been using the bathroom while they were there. But this officer is handing this defendant off to another officer who's not going to know who he is. And it's just have the job of transporting him, may have other prisoner van. His responsibility is to ensure that that defendant is not bringing any drugs or weapons into the police van and ultimately into the jail. Now, if handcuffing him were sufficient, then there wouldn't be any need to conduct searches. But obviously, experience has shown if a defendant, if they bring a weapon and contraband into the police van and into the
essentially
jail.
You can perform this kind of search on anybody maybe going to jail. You can just do it because you don't know which police officers will ultimately be the custodians at the time the person is delivered to the jail.
Now, I want to address that issue, Your Honor, in the context of another Bell v. Wolfish factor, which is the scope and manner of the search. But we are not arguing in this case that there's a general right to arrest, pardon me, to conduct a search of anybody who's arrested. And we're certainly not arguing that it's appropriate to conduct a strip search. And I want to discuss that, Your Honor, with regard to the scope of the search, because although the defense would sort of generalize that any time a search is conducted beneath the defendant's clothes, it's a strip search, we don't believe the law supports that. Now, the strip searches that raise the court's concern, the sort of maximum concern for the courts, are the type of intrusive strip searches that are conducted often in jails and occasionally and improperly on streets. That is
right. The body cavity searches are there's a strip, the universe of strip searches is greater than the universe of body cavities. Do you agree on that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, but the issue here is this, with regard to the scope of the search, Your Honor, the record reflects, number one, there is no intrusion into any body cavity. Now, the defense, as counsel acknowledges, hits this issue hard, but there's no place in the record there's any intrusion or any body cavity. In fact, the testimony establishes the officer shined his flashlight into the defendant's dip area, by which I believe they mean the waistband as opposed to the crotch, but they shined his flashlight into the defendant's pants and saw the drugs. There's no indication he had to manipulate or lift the defendant's genitalia, no indication it was concealed. It was visible when he looked inside. And therefore, as Your Honor pointed out, the knife is irrelevant to this case. The defendant's brief is shot through with references to the knife and manipulating the genitalia, but in fact, the knife is used only in the seizure.
Well, I think that at least what I worry about is where does the precedent in this case go? Are police allowed to bring their knife in and, like, cut away clothes because it would be the same thing? They wouldn't be actually disturbing the clothes, so they can cut the clothes away and you get it. What is it that makes this okay in this case, but not a general imprimatur that you can use your knife to assist you every time you have some suspicion that somebody may have drugs or guns?
Your Honor, there's not going to be a bright line under Bell v. Wolfish because of the balancing of all these factors.
Would you have a case that you think that says that using a knife in these circumstances is okay?
Your Honor, I don't believe any case has been cited that involves a knife. However, as has been acknowledged, the issue here is the search for the drugs. Once the drugs are found, discovered in plain view at that point, if the officer is allowed to look in there and see those drugs, the knife is used only in the seizure.
We're going through the four factors.
Correct.
Okay. So
we've talked about
justification. You don't think this goes to the scope?
We've talked about justification. With regard to scope, the fact that the officers did not intrude in any body cavity, the fact that they simply looked
the took a knife out and were whirling it around.
Absolutely not. We would never condone anybody taking a knife and whirling it around. And in fact, the record...
They whirled it around pretty near what I would think he would regard as important parts of his body, right?
Absolutely not. There's no indication in this record of any kind of whirling around or any inappropriate conduct by the police officer. In fact, the record doesn't reflect any challenge on that issue by the defense. The officer explained that he saw it, he then handed his flashlight to his partner, and then he used the knife to cut the bag. There's no indication of whirling around.
Is that appropriate, the use of the knife there, is that an appropriate police procedure? I mean, if you have these meetings, these state, federal meetings, and when you sit around the table, does everybody say, well, that would be the way to do one of these arrests? Get your knife out.
Your Honor, I regret we don't have those kind of meetings. We just discuss police procedures like that. There was no, I mean, if somebody challenged that and had testimony perhaps on how it could have been done, we'd have a record that might reflect more about it. But all the record says is, you know, he used the knife to remove
the bag. So in the government's position that is true?
Government's position that it is permissible, once the drugs are found in plain view, to use a knife to remove them as opposed to untying them from the defendant's genitalia with the officer's hand.
The question is, it doesn't matter, once the drugs are found, the manner in which they're seized is irrelevant. to this analysis in this case?
That's our position, Your Honor, is that the issue here is, was the discovery, the search for discovery.
No matter how heinous, how degrading, how cruel, how violent, vicious, doesn't matter.
Well, there may well be liability. I mean, if the officer had shot the defendant after finding the drugs, we wouldn't be defending that.
Well, what if it happened in the middle of the day in front of the courthouse and they pulled the pants down and then dug?
They should not be exposing the defendant's genitalia to the public. Our position is that's a distinguishing factor between this case and any other cases that counsel may cite.
The Constitution forbids that, Your Honor?
In our view, Your Honor, the Constitution forbids removing the defendant's pants and exposing him to public view, absent some exigent circumstances that are not present in this case. It would have been improper.
What was the basis for doing this on the street as opposed to in the police wagon?
Your Honor, the officer wasn't asked about that, and I'm not in a position to say whether it would have been more convenient, easier to do it in the police wagon. But I think from the officer's perspective,
there were alternatives, is what I'm suggesting. There was a wagon that was taking him away.
Theoretically, there may be. I mean, if the officer had been asked about that, he might have had an explanation for why. And as I say, I speculate that it may well be that he was giving up the defendant, and his responsibility was to make sure the defendant had been checked for contraband and weapons before he was put in the police van, but I simply don't know the answer to that. I do know, though, Your Honor, that I represent to the court that it is our position that it would have been inappropriate in these circumstances to do a strip search, what we call a strip search, removing of the clothes, as opposed to what the officer did here, which was a visual search inside the defendant's pants, which did not expose him to public view. That's why we believe, Your Honor, that the manner of the search was appropriate. With regard to the place, the fourth L.B. Wolfish factor, the fact that it was done in a manner in which nobody else would see, we believe, is relevant. Now, a van would have been perhaps more secure. On the other hand, perhaps there were other prisoners in the van. We don't know that. We do know that the location they chose was a location where the defendant was not exposed to public view. In fact, the one witness the defense called who saw something. It's not clear whether she actually saw the visual check with a flashlight or simply the initial pat-down, but she certainly didn't see anything inappropriate. She said the defendant's pants were a little bit down, but he wears his pants down. That is, in the normal course of events, the defendant's underwear would be exposed because the pants are below his waist. But she didn't actually see anything out of the ordinary. The evidence shows, Your Honor, with regard to that factor of place, that the district court's finding, Joint Appendix 245-246, is consistent with the government's argument, and we believe that those factual findings, which are not contradicted by the defense, are dispositive of the case. No further questions, Your Honor, I'll submit. Thank you.
Your Honors, I believe that there is a reason why there was no evidence about alternative, inevitable discovery, or anything like that, and that is because the testimony on the record established that this was a routine practice of the Baltimore City Police Department, and that at least for these four police officers involved, this was to be expected. The police officer said it's done 50% of the time, and then said, but that's pretty much because a lot of people are kind of grossed out by this type of search, which suggests that police officers, in this particular officer's view, should be doing this more often. He said, it's always your best option. That is the precise situation where the exclusionary rule is appropriate, when there is a policy of a police department that needs to change. That is the way that courts are able to do so. The Fourth Amendment does not only protect the worst-case scenarios. The Fourth Amendment protects other violations as well. I would also like to comment on the use of the word dip, which is all through the government brief, and Mr. Rosenstein referred to it as well. The use of urban slang to make this sound like a more innocuous event does not change the fact that the police did conduct a visual inspection of the skin of Mr. Edwards' pelvic area. That is a strip search. It is not a dip search.
But it's not a body cavity search.
It's not what we would consider a body cavity search.
I thought I had read that in your brief.
It is in my brief, and that's because of the way that that term is defined by the courts. This court doesn't need to find that. But that is the way that courts define body cavity searches. For example, even if a woman is asked to lift her breast so that the police officers can inspect underneath that, that is considered a body cavity search. It's, again, it could be worse. Like in the Ford case from the Eastern District of Virginia, that was a much grosser violation than this, but still, it is not only the worst case scenario that is protected. The government agrees that there is no articulable reason why Mr. Edwards himself should have been subjected to this particular type of search. The government relies only on the general possibilities of finding evidence of an offense that was not the offense of arrest. For the government to prevail in this case, this court would have to say that any search incident to arrest could involve the police exposing the arrestee's naked genitals without any other exigency or any other probable cause or reasonable suspicion. But the Fourth Amendment does not allow that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.